Greetings and welcome to another episode of Surgical Educator Podcast. I am your host or Master of Ceremony, and today we are going to discuss a topic that is of utmost importance in the realm of gastroenterology and surgery, colorectal carcinoma. This not only presents as a significant cause of lower GI hemorrhage, but also requires a comprehensive understanding for effective management. Joining us today is Professor Dr. Selvaraj, an experienced general and pediatric surgeon. Welcome, Dr. Selvaraj. Thank you for having me, MC. It is a pleasure to be here and discuss this critical topic. Okay, doctor, let us start with the basics. How prevalent is colorectal carcinoma and who is most at risk? Well, colorectal carcinoma is one of the most common cancers globally. The risk increases with age, and it is slightly more common in men than in women. Lifestyle factors such as diet, physical activity, and family history also play a role. Colorectal cancer is the second most common malignancy in the United States, with more than 155,000 new cases diagnosed annually. Incidence is highest in industrialized countries and is age-specific, increasing steadily from the second to the ninth decades. In women, this is the most lethal cancer after lung and breast cancers. In men, it is third most lethal cancer after lung cancer and prostate cancer. It is more common in rectosigmoid area. Incidence of cancers in the right colon as compared to the left is now increasing. Therefore, screening should be of the entire colon and not just the rectosigmoid region. So the incidence is rectosigmoid region is 78%, cecum 6%, ascending colon 3%, hepatic flexure 2%, transverse colon 5%, splenic flexure 3%, and descending colon also 3%. What is the etiopathogenesis of colorectal carcinoma? The development of colorectal carcinoma is often linked to a series of genetic mutations and environmental factors. Precancerous polyps, known as adenomas, can transform into cancer over time. Risk factors include a family history of colorectal cancer, inflammatory bowel diseases, and certain genetic syndromes. Genetics increase incidence in first degree relatives of colorectal cancer patients, especially with age less than 50 years at diagnosis. A. Familial adenomatous polyposis or FAP, which is associated with CRC in less than 1% of the cases only. The gene responsible has been identified on the short arm of chromosome 5. The condition is diagnosed when patient has more than 100 adenomatous polyps in the colon. It is autosomal dominant in character. Polyps are usually visible on endoscopy by the age of 15 years. Carcinomatous change occurs 10 to 15 years after the onset of polyposis. B. HNPCC or hereditary non-polyposis colonic cancer. It is associated with CRC, that is colorectal cancer, in 5 to 10% of these HNPCC cases. This is also called Lynch syndrome. The genetic abnormality is usually on chromosome 17 or 18, and this is also autosomal dominant in nature. Amsterdam criteria has defined this Lynch syndrome. Number one, three or more relatives with colorectal cancer should be there, spanning to two generations, and one among them is a first degree relative. Number two, one or more colorectal cancer cases diagnosed before the age of 50 years. Apart from these two conditions, IBD is both Crohn's and ulcerative, but ulcerative colitis is more prone to develop into malignancy than the Crohn's disease. C. Environmental factors, diet, unsaturated fats induce progression from adenomas to carcinoma. Exposure to food additives, alcohol, ionizing radiation, bile acids promote development of carcinoma. Development of carcinoma is a multi-step process. The mucosal epithelium progresses through a series of molecular and cellular events. Further genetic alteration results in higher degrees of cellular ATPA and glandular disorganization. The adenoma to carcinoma sequence is always associated with some genetic changes, even in sporadic colon cancers. Spread of this cancer, local spread is by continuity along the bowel wall or by contiguity to adjacent structures. Lymphatic spread, lymph nodes draining the colon are arranged in four groups. They are epicolic, paracolic, intermediate and central nodes. They are lying in immediate vicinity of the bowel wall in care of epicolic and paracolic. Intermediate nodes along the ileocolic, right colic and middle colic or sigmoidal artery all are branches from the superior and inferior mesenteric arteries. And the apical nodes are around the origin of superior and inferior mesenteric arteries. Bloodstream spread, metastasis may occur quite early in the liver via the portal system. Lower rectal carcinoma usually spread to lungs. Well described, doctor. What are the clinical features of colorectal carcinoma? Even though we call everything as colorectal carcinoma, it is actually three different entities: right and left to colon carcinoma and rectal carcinoma. They present differently and treatment also totally different. So now I am going to describe under the three headings: right colon cancer, left to colon cancer and rectal cancer. Right colon cancer comprises 10% of the colorectal cancers. The mass, it is characterized by mass or lump in the right iliac fossa. Number two, anemia due to protracted occult blood loss. Number three, pyrexia of unknown origin. Number four, appendicitis when carcinoma occludes the appendicular orifice. And number five, weight loss. Whereas the left colon carcinoma comprises 30% of the total colorectal cancers. Number one, patients will be having pain in the left iliac fossa, which is referred to the suprapubic area. Number two, alteration of the bowel habit is the most common symptom. That means the same patient will have both constipation and diarrhea alternatively. Number three, palpable lump may be there in the left iliac fossa. Number four, loss of weight. And number five, patient may pass small caliber stool or pencil thin stool. Whereas rectosigmoid region comprises of more than 60% of the cases. Number one, blood and mucus per rectum. The most common and earliest symptom is patient will be passing not only blood, along with the blood, mucus also these patients will pass. And patient will be having what is called tenesmus, that is incomplete sensation of evacuation of the bowel. Even after passing the complete stool, patient will be having a sensation of incomplete evacuation of the bowel because of the growth in the rectum. Number three, sacral or perineal pain, if it is secondary in the mesorectum or in the perineal area. Number four, weight loss. Clinical features can vary, but common symptoms include changes in bowel habits, blood in the stool, abdominal pain or discomfort, unexplained weight loss, and fatigue may be there in all three types of the colorectal cancer. Lower GI hemorrhage is particularly significant and can present as bright red blood, that is hematochezia, in the stool, or as dark tarry stool or melena. When you suspect colorectal carcinoma, what diagnostic approaches are commonly employed? Well, the diagnosis involves colonoscopy or sigmoidoscopy to visualize up to the sigmoid colon. It is sigmoidoscopy. To visualize the whole colon, you have to use the colonoscopy. You have to visualize, and if there are any tumor, you have to update, or any suspicious areas, you must take biopsy. Number two, blood tests. We must do hemoglobin along with hematocrit, liver function test, fecal occult blood test or Goyer test, and tumor markers like carcinoembryonic antigen. Imaging studies such as CCT or MRI or double contrast barium enema to determine the extent of the disease. CCT for distant metastasis, MRI in rectal cancer to rule out mesorectal involvement, transrectal ultrasound to determine the depth of invasion into the bowel wall by a rectal tumor, and involvement of lymph nodes also. How is colorectal carcinoma staged? Staging involves determining the size of the tumor, whether it has spread to lymph nodes or other organs. TNM system is commonly used, considering tumor size, nodal involvement, and metastasis. The other stagings are Duke staging and Osler-Kohler modified Duke staging. Duke staging, it is four grades or stage. Stage A, stage B, stage C and D. Stage A, invasion into but not through the bowel wall. Stage B, invasion through the bowel wall but not involving lymph nodes. Stage C, involvement of lymph nodes. And stage D widespread metastasis. This is the original Duke's grading. But now there is Osler-Kohler modified Duke staging. Stage 1, the invasion is limited to mucosa. Stage B1, it is extending into muscularis propria, but not penetrating through it, nodes are not involved. Stage B2, penetrating through the muscularis propria, nodes still not involved. Stage C1, extending into muscularis propria, but not penetrating through it, but nodes are involved. Stage C2, penetrating through the muscularis propria, and nodes are also involved. Stage D, distant metastatic spread. Well, doctor, what complications can arise from colorectal carcinoma? Yes, complications may include bowel obstruction, perforation, and as we are discussing today, lower GI hemorrhage, which can be life-threatening occasionally. Okay, doctor, what are the treatment options for colorectal cancer? Treatment depends on the stage of the cancer, but options include surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation therapy. Surgery is often the primary treatment, and the extent of surgery depends on factors like the location and stage of the tumor. If it is carcinoma of the right colon and early stages, we can do radical right hemicolectomy. If it is carcinoma of the hepatic flexure and right transverse colon, we can do radical extended right hemicolectomy. If it is carcinoma in the transverse colon, then we can do radical transverse colectomy. If it is carcinoma of the left colon or descending colon, we can do radical left hemicolectomy. If it is carcinoma of the sigmoid colon, then we can do radical sigmoidectomy only. If it is cancer in the rectum, this is divided into 3 areas. If cancer is in the upper third of the rectum, then we can do high anterior resection, where the tumor will be more than 15 centimeters from the anal wedge. If it is in the middle segment of the middle one third of the rectum, we can do low anterior resection, where the tumor will be more than 8 centimeters from the anal wedge. Or if the tumor is within 6 centimeters from the anal wedge, that is low rectal cancer, where we should do abdominoperineal resection with total mesorectal excision. Okay, APR with total mesorectal excision. Hartmann's procedure in emergency situation where the large bowel is unprepared, we can do resection, but we shouldn't do primary anastomosis. Instead, we can do what is called Hartmann's procedure, where the proximal end of the bowel, the colon, will be brought up outside as a colostomy. This is only a temporary colostomy, whereas the distal end of the colon will be closed, and it will be kept inside the peritoneal cavity, so that maybe after 2 or 3 months again we can rejoin both these ends. Very well explained, doctor. What follow-up regimen you have to follow for a post-op case of colorectal carcinoma? Most tumors recur in the first 2 years after curative resection. Colonoscopy and Bari minima are done in the post-op period to establish a baseline. Colonoscopy is repeated annually for at least 4 years, then every 2 or 3 years we can do. CEA level is done every 2 months for 2 years, every 4 months for another 2 years, then we can do it annually, CA level. CA level is a sign of either a recurrence or any distant metastasis. And we have to do a thorough workup to find out where are the secondaries or the recurrence of the primary. Chest X-ray should be done every 6 months for 3 years, then we can do it annually. Complete blood count and liver function test should be performed every 3 months for 2 years, then every 6 months for 2 years, and then annually. Thank you, Professor Dr. Selvaraj, for guiding us through the complexities of colorectal carcinoma. This information is invaluable for medical professionals at all stages of their careers. It has been a pleasure, and I hope this discussion helps our audience gain a deeper understanding of colorectal carcinoma and its management. Early detection and a multidisciplinary approach are crucial for successful outcome in these cases. Absolutely, doctor. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Surgical Educator Podcast. Keep exploring the world of surgery by watching the other podcasts of Surgical Educator Podcast series. And until next time, stay curious. Bye-bye. See you again in the next episode.